Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Frankenfood news when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, these global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, so reports the Club of Rome. Now, in Revelation 6, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, told us exactly the same thing in essentially the same terms, using words like false prophets, war, famine, and disease. In 1920, about half of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers. They produced their own food, and they produced food for the rest of the world, and they produced food for you and me. But today, we Americans have chosen to live in our cities, and now only 3% of our population now lives on the land. 97% of us then are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right, and then we import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 World Population Control Program. These globalists, with the genocide agenda, have a cause, and they have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause. And let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, and entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, our subsistence and survival school is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Then click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Frankenfood. The thing we call Frankenfood is genetically modified organisms. It's the last step in a long road in violation of Leviticus 19, verse 19. Our God instructed us that we're not to hybridize our seeds, not to mingle our seed. It produces a hybrid variety that is advertised as being new and improved. You ever see that? It's new and improved. Constantly we're reminded that this is a new seed and it has been improved. But Adolf Steinbrom, out in Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. And when these new and improved varieties of hybrid seed, more than 4,000 samples of these hybrid seeds, corn seeds, tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, well, Steinbrun's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result was seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. And in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, this hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being. Now, there's more that goes into the equation than hybridization. It also has to do with land Sabbaths and jubilees, the fertilization, the mining of the land, the loss of minerals, the loss of topsoil, the loss of organic material. There's a lot that goes into farming, but Frankenfood is the latest step over the past 10 or 15 years in a long degenerative journey that mankind has been engaged in over the last 3,000 years to the total annihilation and destruction of the human race. That's where it's all headed. For instance, Joel Wallach pointed out in Rare Earths that in North America, we have now mined 85%. That's 85% of the minerals are no longer available to plants in our soil. 15% are still there. We haven't mined it out completely. But if you'll take a look at our disease rate, in 1918, we Americans had 60% of our population without symptoms and 40% with. That sounds bad. If you say, my God, out of 100 people, 60 are well and 40 are sick. Today, in 2006, it's 99% have symptoms, 99% of us in America are sick, there's something wrong with us, and only 1% of us are symptom-free. No, boys and girls, it's not getting better, it's getting worse. In 1900, the cancer rate was 1 out of 33. Your chances of developing cancer in your lifetime, if you were born in 1900, out of every 33 births, one of them, one person out of 33, one-third, just one out of 33, not a third, but one out of 33, would develop cancer in their lifetime. Today it's 1 out of 2, 50%. 50%. And they tell us by the year 2020, which is just 14 years away, it'll be 100%, one out of one, will develop cancer at some point in his life. Now, the war on cancer is a total failure. It's a sham. It's a farce. It's a joke. There is a cause for disease. And the cause for disease is the soil. We have sick soil, and it turns out sick, weak plants, which do not give us the nutrition that we need, which in turn turns out sick people. Now, the major corporations, recognizing the problems with the soil, have to come up with new scientific, new and improved varieties of seed to further mine the little bit of nutrition that's left in the soil. And genetically modified seeds are that latest march to death, the latest march to the total annihilation of the human race. Now, in America, we have the worst soil in the world. It's mined out at 85%, but in Africa, South America, and Asia, it's 75% mined out. They have a few more minerals than we do. They have a few more years. But the ultimate end, if you carry it out to its logical conclusion, is you'll have soil that has no minerals. And when the soil has no minerals, there'll be none in your plants. That means that the food that you eat will have no minerals at all. And that means that without minerals, you will become weak, sick, your immune system fails, you develop a disease, and you die. The ultimate end is death. Kind of reminds me of Romans 6:23, that sin produces death. The ultimate end, when you get down on the bottom line, sin produces death. Well, a new study shows that unborn babies could be harmed by genetically engineered foods. And so, if you've been wondering about these new genetically engineered foods and what their effect on your body is going to be, it was an experiment that was undertaken some 15 to 20 years ago. Without any prior testing, we Americans have been the guinea pigs. Well, I should say you Americans have been the guinea pigs. I avoid GM foods like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD, and Mack trucks at busy intersections. So I've been watching other people. I've been watching people like you eat the genetically modified foods, and then I'm sitting back and watching the results. And oftentimes, it works like a guy going into McDonald's, orders a Big Mac, eats it, walks out and says, "See, didn't kill me." Walks on down the street, laughs at me, and goes about his business. All right, well, that's day one. Let's try day two. Can you continually do this for 10, 20, 30, 40 years? Can you do this for 75 years? Can you do it for 100, 200, or 300 years? You know, just because you can get away with something like smoking a cigarette and it doesn't kill you, does that mean that smoking then is safe, healthful, nutritious, or beneficial? Well, The Independent, January 8, 2006, reported that women who eat genetically modified foods while they're pregnant risk endangering their unborn babies. Startling new research suggests. The World Trade Organization is expected next month to support a bid by the Bush administration to force European countries to accept genetically modified foods. The study, carried out by a leading scientist at the Russian Academy of Sciences, found that more than half of the offspring of rats fed on modified soy died in the first 3 weeks of life, six times as many as those born to mothers with normal diets. Six times as many were also severely underweight, and the research, which is being prepared for publication, is just one more of a clutch of recent studies that are reviving fears that genetically modified food damages human health. Italian research has found that modified soy affected the liver and pancreas of mice. Australia had to abandon a decade-long attempt to develop modified peas when an official study found that they caused lung damage. And last May, this newspaper revealed a secret report by the biotech giant Monsanto, which showed that rats fed a diet rich in GM corn had smaller kidneys and higher blood cell counts. That suggests possible damage to their immune systems than those that ate a similar conventional diet. Now, another factor that we've observed is this. When you take genetically modified corn and you put it out free range to cattle, and then in the same pen you put out open pollinated corn, the cattle will go eat the open pollinated corn first. Evidently it tastes better, smells better, they like it better. They'll eat genetically modified corn. If there's nothing else there, they'll eat it. Now the question arises, well, what does it do to the cattle? What does it do to us when we eat the meat that comes from the cows? Well, that's a question that is still to be turned in. That's an issue that we don't know the answer to yet. I don't want to be one of those guinea pigs, so I'm going to watch you. So eat more of it so that I can have more to watch. This article, by the way, comes from the Heirloom Gardener. This is the winter edition. It comes out 4 issues a year. It's actually a catalog filled with articles, kind of like the Farmer's Almanac. And I'm going to recommend it to you because it is one source of open pollinated seed, and the owner, whose name is Jerry Gettle, produces open pollinated seed for sale to Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. He's just a little small independent seed grower. There are a few of these around the country, not many. Normally, when you go into your garden store, Walmart or some other big corporate supplier, they only sell hybridized seed. If you want open pollinated seed, you're going to have to look long and hard to find it. And this is one of those sources. Now, the Heirloom Gardener magazine is published 4 times a year by Rare Seed Publishers, located at 2278 Baker Creek Road, Mansfield, Missouri, 65704. I think you should jot down the name and address. It may come back to a point in time that you may need it. And I may be dead and pushing up daisies by that time. And when you call here and say, "Oh, yeah, I remember that story that you had," It was on the air. Can you tell me where to get these seeds? All right, this guy's name again is Jerry Gettle, G-E-T-T-L-E. He's an Amish guy, Jerry Gettle. And then it's called the Heirloom Gardener. And it's, the address is P.O. Box 70 in Mansfield, Missouri, zip code 65704. 0070, if you want to put on the box number, 00770. They got a telephone out there. If you want to call them, it's 417-924-1222. Again, that's area code 417-924-1222. That's 1222. They've also got an email, and they've got a web page. If you want to go to the web page, it's www.rareseeds.com. It's an easy one. www.rareseeds.com, and the email is seeds@rareseeds.com. Simple enough. Seeds@rareseeds.com. 1 year, 4 issues, $12. Canada or Mexico, $18. Elsewhere, $30. U.S. funds only. The Heirloom Gardener magazine is published 4 times a year by Rare Seed Publishing at 2278 Baker Creek Road, Mansfield, Missouri, 65704. They have a fair every September. And that's Rare Seed Publishing, 2278 Baker Creek Road, Mansfield, Missouri, 65704. And pretty good operation, pretty good guy. Open pollinated seed. Vegetarian people, they are. This magazine is published by the Ozark Hillbillies, who won't be held responsible for any printing errors, misprints, or other mix-ups, such as misspelled words. We're proud of our heritage, and any letters or unsolicited articles become the property of the Heirloom Gardener magazine. All letters and articles may be edited for any reason. Established in 2003, the Heirloom Gardener is an Heirloom Gardener's publication specializing in articles about non-hybrid heirloom varieties of seed. Readers are interested in all things natural. This includes, but is not limited to, seed sources, preservation, collecting, history, growing tips, name origins, vegetarian recipes, and related travel. Our gardeners want to preserve the past by cultivating old-time vegetables, herbs, flowers, and berries. Our readers look for well-researched, tightly crafted pieces. We reserve the right to edit or decline any material that we feel does not strictly follow this aim. Remember that again, it's called the Heirloom Gardener. And that address, again, is Post Office Box 70, Mansfield, Missouri, 65704. That email is seeds@rareseeds.com. All one word, rare seeds is one word. And their website is www.rareseeds.com. Now, Monsanto moves to force-feed Europe genetically engineered corn. Friends of the Earth in Europe, dated January 10, 2006, in Brussels, Belgium, the U.S.-based biotech giant Monsanto is aiming to genetically modify all of Europe's maize over the next 4 years. So reveals a new Friends of the Earth report released today. The report also concludes that in the 10 years since the introduction of genetically modified corn, or genetically modified foods in general in Europe, the biotech industry has failed to deliver any benefits for consumers or for the environment, and it has not played any role in solving hunger or poverty. The Friends of the Earth report highlights that over the past 10 years, Monsanto and its trade bodies have consistently worked to weaken European laws to protect consumers, the environment, and farmers, and that despite overwhelming public rejection of genetically modified food in Europe, Monsanto and the biotech industry have an unacceptable influence over many parts of European food supply, research, and agriculture policy. Now, over in Scotland, a unique finding. This comes from the Scotsman, dated January 4th, 2006. More than half of Scottish children under the age of 2 are now being fed an exclusively organic diet, even when their parents are unable to afford to buy organic food for themselves. It's done this way. Organic baby food sales accounted for 43% of the total market in 2004, at a value of £63 million, I should say. But sales show that more than half of all Scot parents are now buying organic for their youngsters. Now, lax oversight has been found in tests of genetically altered crops, published in the New York Times, January 3, 2006. The Department of Agriculture has failed to regulate field trials of genetically engineered crops and of adequately raising the risk of unintended environmental consequences, according to a stinging report issued by the department's own auditor. The report, issued late last month by the department's Office of the Inspector General, found that biotechnology regulators did not always notice violations of their own rules, and they did not inspect planting sites when they should have, and they did not assure that the genetically engineered crops were destroyed when the field trial was completed. These genetically modified crops bleed over into the neighbors. For instance, you can't stop the bees. So the bees come over and they take the pollen off of these GM crops and move it over to your side of the fence and then pollute your seed string. And in fact, that's one of the goals of the big GM companies like ADM, Cargill, and Monsanto. It is to pollute the seed stock on planet Earth. Now that's quite an experiment, don't you think? Normally, when we do experimentation, we go out and we come up with an idea, and then we go out and we field test it, and then we try it on animals, and then we try it on humans. And after some years of experimentation and trials, we come to a conclusion that this is pretty safe, and so, yeah, we'll go ahead and do it. It may not be good policy, and it may not be a good product, but at least it's not damaging. With genetic modification, there's never been any experimentation. I just started right out at ground zero and started experimenting on the American people. And what's worse, they went down to Mexico, which is pretty dependent upon their maize crop, their corn crop down there, and planted some, not all, but some genetically modified fields right in the middle of Mexico's open pollinated seed. And then that pollen drifts over into these other seeds and pollutes those other seeds so that they don't have, in many locations in Mexico, 100% organic seed. Here in the Ozarks, we're still using organic 100% seeds, that is 100% heirloom seeds, because this is not a normal farming community. The corn country is up north of us. So far they haven't come down here and polluted our seed, but given enough time they will. So it's important for you to have a supply of heirloom seeds. Now, let me tell you about mine, and then let's see whether or not that fits with you. Number one, I've got one of those ammunition boxes. You know, a little box, probably a foot long, 6 inches wide, maybe 6-8 inches tall. You buy them at the Army surplus store. Neat little boxes. They're airtight, they're watertight, painted real well inside and out. Steel box. Well, I filled it up with heirloom seeds and I put it in my freezer. So I have a 4-year supply of seed in my freezer, and it'll keep long-term for about 25 years frozen. That's number one. Number two, over on my shelf, I also have a seed collection of about 100 varieties of seeds, maybe a few more. I keep those in glass bottles, and I update those seeds from time to time. They're kept at room temperature. And then I have a third source. It's this year's garden. Every year I put in a garden of some size. Sometimes it's big and sometimes it's small. And then off of the seeds that I raise, off of the vegetables or the flowers and plants that I raise, I save those seeds. Then I've got a fourth place that I try to produce food, and that's out in the wild. Here in the Ozarks, one person can survive in the wild on 11 acres. There's enough wild food on 11 acres of ground here in the Ozarks to support one person. Now, that's a lot of ground, 11 acres, a pretty good-sized piece of real estate. But by the same token, one person eats about 365 pounds of dried food, or about 1,500 pounds of wet food per year. It's about 3 pounds per day, so just take 3 times 365, and it's about 1,095 pounds. That's 1,100 pounds, round that off to about 1,500 pounds, to give yourself a little surplus. Don't cut yourself short. If it's dry food, it's about 1 pound a day, or about 365 pounds, round that off to 400 pounds of dry food per person per year. And here in these hills, about 11 acres will support one person. So, we have a lot of native plants. Things like poke, sorrel, walnuts, black walnuts. We have hickory nuts. We have persimmons, wild garlic, wild onions, lamb's quarter. There's probably 15 or 20 of these wild plants that, you know, are good for food, good for protein, good to eat, will keep you alive, heck of a lot better than spinach, but not quite as tasty as Hershey bars and York peppermint patty. But in a pinch, 24% protein comes out of your hickory nuts and out of your walnuts. And these trees, by the way, grow wild here. So I help them. I go down in the woods every once in a while, and I may have something that I can plant. And so some plants that are not only food plants, but medicinal plants, they may be herbs, wild herbs like ginseng, or like wild hawthorn berries. We actually plant those and encourage their growth. I go down in the woods and I prune around walnut trees to take the other trees away from them so that they'll have more room to grow and that they will bear and produce more walnuts. Now, I do that just out of my own personal self-interest, because in the world today, there are about 6.5 billion people. There is no more farmland on planet Earth today than there was with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. In fact, there's less farmland today than there was 100 years ago, or 200, or 500 years ago, because we are consuming farmland and we are burying it under parking lots, freeways, and city streets. Now, that's just here in America, but around the world we are practicing desertification. We're cutting the trees in sub-Saharan Africa and expanding the Sahara Desert at the rate of 100 square miles per year. We are cutting down the Amazon rainforest at the rate of 4,000 square miles per year. The ecology, or the ecologic destruction going on around the world, guarantees that at some point in time, whether it's next year or 5 years or 10 years or 50 years from now, but if you keep destroying the land and you keep adding more mouths to feed, at some point in time, there will be more people than there is food to feed them. Now, since 1970, the food supply has gone down worldwide from a 70-day supply to about a 40-day supply. It's been cut by just about half. That doesn't tell me that there's more food out there and that I ought to sit back and relax. It tells me that I probably ought to stock more. I ought to be better prepared. I ought to be thinking about famine rather than abundance. Although today in America, Americans are satisfied, that they can go to Walmart three times a week, buy food, come back, put it in the refrigerator, and on average, the American family has a three-day supply of food in their refrigerator. 3 days, on average. I don't know, boys and girls, we just saw Hurricane Katrina and Rita. We just saw the Gulf Coast. We saw the devastation down there. Can you imagine that occurring on a broader scale? Can you picture that in America over the next 50 years? Because while America is a net food exporter today, by the year 2008, we will be a net food importer. And by the year 2050, America will be totally dependent upon foreign sources of food to feed our population of around 600 million people. Now, there's 300 here now, and in the next 50 years, they tell us we're going to add another 300 million. That 600 million people, just extrapolated out, will be totally dependent upon foreign food sources. We're not quite there yet, but we're headed in that direction. Boys and girls, that does not sound good to me. Maybe it's not a problem to you, but it doesn't sound good to me. Well, let's see here. I should give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Need to give you that reminder so that we can tell you that the radio stations that carry this program are not responsible for the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program. So don't blame the networks, don't blame the radio station, and don't blame the station managers or the employees that work there. Just blame me. Call me and tell me that I'm a jerk, but don't waste your time calling them. Because they don't necessarily subscribe to the same beliefs and opinions that I do. So our advertisers, sponsors, management, and staff of the network and radio station are totally separate from the opinions and views of this program. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program, we believe to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief based upon our research. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate by endorsing and recommending the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political guys, or they're religious, economic, or sectarian, or they may be racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not, cannot, and will not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and vice versa. Those people don't necessarily want to endorse what we have to say here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So if you understand that distinction, then it'll be of great benefit to us here at the station, or us here at the Law Hour and the radio stations and the advertisers. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we're open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, just go to the law school or the Law Hour website. It's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the Heirloom Gardener, and it's put out by a young fellow. When I say young fellow, I'm just looking at his picture here. I guess he's 25 years old, 30 maybe. Doesn't look like he's 30. His name is Jerry Gettle. And feature that he puts out, or the publication he puts out, is called the Heirloom Gardener. And it's aimed at supplying you with heirloom open-pollinated garden seeds. That's the objective here. I recommend it because I think every American family needs a 4-year supply of seeds. And I think you should have a supply of seeds, whether you garden or not, stuck away in your freezer. In an emergency, you might need them. You know, just assuming there is a potential emergency, you know, like war or hurricane or famine, something comes up. And you can make contact with these guys, the Heirloom Gardener. The publication is at P.O. Box 70, Mansfield, Missouri, just up the road here a piece. The zip code is 65704, P.O. Box 70, Mansfield, Missouri, 65704. And they've got a phone up there. It's 417-924-1222. Again, that's 417-924-1222. And they've got an email. It's called seeds at rareseeds.com. It's an easy one. Seeds, S-E-E-D-S, at rareseeds.com. And they've got a webpage called www.rareseeds.com. Easy enough, rareseeds.com, 1 year, 4 issues, $12. Now, the magazine itself is probably, you just take a look at pages here, about 50 pages, and it has a number of articles. If you're a gardener, Tales of the Tomato Snatcher, and My Adventures in Growing Melons, Raised Beds, The Easy Way to Garden. And then favorite heirloom vegetables and flowers from seed. Are you out of your gourd? Soil sampling and testing. A plethora of phylloxes. Whatever the hell a phyllox is, a flower. Elderberry thyme, elderberry wine, elderberry juice. Interview with an okra man, and so on. These are just a few of the articles. I'm telling you, there's many more articles in here for you to read, 50 pages. In addition, I just zeroed in on the Frankenfood section over here, Frankenfood News. These people are vegetarians and very interesting folks. This guy Gettle is an Amish guy. Not that that's a plus or a minus. I just wanted to point that out to you, that he's interested in organic foods. He's a little bit more modern than the average Amish guy. I guess he's got electricity if he's got a website. And he might not be Amish. He may be that other group. What's that other group's name over there? Mennonites. He might be a Mennonite. I just see here in his picture, he dresses kind of funny. So I think that'll suffice. Dresses funny. Nice looking young guy, probably 6 foot tall, skinny as a rail, needs to put on a little more weight. Guy's name is Jerry Gettle. I think he puts on a fair about September or October. I think it's about every September, but might be as late as October in the fall, in which they put on this little fair so that you can come up there and you can take a look at this organic operation. He's got a pretty good size operation. A little family farm, a little family seed farm is what they've got there. Let me tell you a couple of more stories. You know, over in France, they've been protesting GMO crops. Well, in France, Orleans, France, and a judgment expected to send a chill through companies growing these genetically modified crops in Europe and then embolden their opponents. A French court on Friday was cited as acquitting 49 activists who destroyed GM plants after ruling that their actions were justified. I guess it comes under self-defense over in France. The terrorists over there, these are consumers, went out into the fields of these Monsanto companies and other GM corporations, the multinationals over there, and they destroyed their plants. I'm not advocating that. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to tell you that that's what they did, and the French court turned them loose for some reason. I wouldn't advise that here in the United States. I think they'll lock you up for life. We Americans embrace technology. We Americans are in favor of GMO foods. The average American consumer doesn't know anything about it, doesn't care. He's perfectly satisfied with what he gets from the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, or our Department of Agriculture. I'm not. Makes me as nervous as a whore in church every time I go in the supermarket and say FDA approved. If it's got FDA approval on it, it probably isn't fit for human consumption, and I'd be careful about feeding it to my dog. Now, over in India, they're stopping theft of ancient knowledge. I mentioned this, I think, last week in our series of programs, that Americans reject any knowledge that comes from anywhere other than the United States and scientific advances or scientific institutions here in the United States. We have a complex over here. We believe that we're the best and the brightest and that the rest of you people out there in the world are all stupid. At least that's the average American. In any event, the Indians, this is the nation of India, over here, you know, on the other side of Africa, they're concerned about building a database of indigenous knowledge to keep entrepreneurs from making a profit from it. Now, for thousands of years, Indian villagers have used an extract from seeds of the neem tree as an insecticide. So there's a tree over there, they call it the neem tree, N-E-E-M tree. And they go over and they take the pods off of it and they boil it down. They make an extract. They put it into water. They go out and they spray their plants and kill insects with it. It's probably a natural insecticide. And so they've been doing this now for thousands of years. Now, some entrepreneurial corporation, probably Monsanto or somebody, marauding around, discovered that. And then they went out and synthesized it. And then they went and copyrighted and patented, and then they want to make profit and gain off of it. And, of course, they're not going to tell anybody. They're going to make profit and gain off of something that's been around for thousands of years. And the Indians are just outraged by it. So when a U.S. company patented a process for producing the substance in 1994, India acted and reacted with outrage. After spending millions of dollars in legal fees to successfully overturn the patent, India's government now is creating a 30 million page database. I don't know if that's really true, but 30 million page database, that sounds like a lot of pages, but that's what it says here. 30 million page database of traditional knowledge to fend off entrepreneurs trying to patent the country's ancient folklore. Now, India is not alone in worrying about these bioprospectors. And these bioprospectors are profiting from the genetic resources of its plant life with no benefit to the people, no benefit to anybody but the corporation. And it's joined now by China, Brazil, and nine other nations a few years ago to begin pushing for international protection. Now, they've been going down to the Amazon. Now, these are the companies like Pfizer and Merck, pharmaceuticals. And they go down there and they watch these people and they say, well, what are you doing? You got pneumonia? What are you doing? So they got something that they're doing for diabetes or pneumonia or some kind of disease down here. And then they go down, they bring it back and they synthesize it. And it's good for corporate business. It makes money. They patent it, and then they make billions of dollars off of it. Now, you'd think just as, you know, reasonable people would do, if you told me about something like Essiac, you got that from the Indians. I mentioned this to you in the Essiac program. Remember that? Renee Cassey did not discover SCX. The woman that gave her the recipe for it, she didn't discover it. It was a folk medicine that was discovered by the Oboji or the Okoboji Indians up in Quebec or Ontario. I guess it was Ontario, Canada. And these Indians had discovered this cancer cure. Renee Cassey wanted to give it to the people of Canada. She did. She actually gave it free. She was a medical nurse, regular allopathic medical doctor nurse. She gave it to the allopathic medical doctors. They rejected it. They used it. They proved it. They showed that it was a good remedy, that it cured cancer. But because it's so cheap, it only costs $40 to produce, they outlawed it. They don't want that. Now, the Indians never got credit, never got a dime, never got paid a nickel for their discovery. Now, it would seem like to me, you Canadians, you know, ought to be thankful to that Native American Indian tribe. In the same way that many of these discoveries in modern medicine, you know, like insulin, they discovered that insulin because there are native plants that have this insulin, and when you eat this insulin, when you eat these plants, you know, it cures your diabetes or it alleviates it. And so they came back and they said, well, we can make that insulin out of coal tar, which they do. But the source of information that they got it from never gets credit, never gets paid, never makes a dime off of it. Somehow that just doesn't seem quite fair, does it? How about Rumsfeld? You ever heard of our Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld? Well, he's getting rich off of bird flu fear. Bird flu. The prospect of a bird flu outbreak may be panicking people around the world, but it's proving to be very good news for Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and other politically connected investors in Gilead Sciences, the California biotech company that owns the rights to Tamiflu, the influenza remedy that's now the most sought-after drug in the world. Rumsfeld served as Gilead Research Chairman from 1997 until he joined the Bush administration in 2001, and he still holds a Gilead stake valued at between $5 and $25 million, according to federal financial disclosures filed by Rumsfeld. Now, that's kind of real special. I don't think that Rumsfeld should be faulted because he was the... an officer in a corporation, and that he has stock, and that this stock is worth $5 to $25 million. But is it just coincidental that this company got the Tamiflu license from a company called Hoffmann LaRoche over in Switzerland? Suppose maybe there was a little favoritism there. Now, this bird flu is expected, not just expected; it's predicted by the CDC and others in our government to at some point in time, we don't know when, but at some point in time, to go ballistic on us and be transmissible from human to human. Now, after having taken a look at the AIDS epidemic in this country and the pandemic worldwide, we find that AIDS was a biological weapon developed by the British in Sierra Leone in 1963. They developed it. Just like, you know, our army in Bethesda, Maryland, they have vast stockpiles of biologic agents like bubonic plague and smallpox and various other diseases. It's just that this AIDS was such a long term. You know, you can't use this on the battlefield and then wait 30 years for it to metastasize and then strike down your opponents. So it was too slow acting. But boy, it was a powerful disease, and it's still a powerful disease, and it's got 40 million people infected, 25 million people dead. And it's a biologic disease which was manufactured in a laboratory. Now, this bird flu over here, I suspect, is another one of those biologic agents, as was the Spanish flu of 1918. Now, that Spanish flu got started over here in Fort Riley, Kansas, in 1917. When we got involved in the war, we started vaccinating all of our troops. We experimented with them. And then we sent them over to Europe with the flu. We spread it worldwide, and it killed somewhere between, we don't know exactly, but 25 to 100 million people. And the reason that we don't know exactly is because, like AIDS, you see, when somebody gets AIDS, and then an opportunistic disease jumps in, like tuberculosis, and the guy dies from TB, you put on his birth, on his death certificate, that he died from TB. Now, the truth of the matter is, the TB was an opportunistic disease that attacked this guy because his immune system wasn't working, and that's because he had AIDS. You see, very few people die from AIDS. You get AIDS, but you don't die from the AIDS. You die from something else. You die from pneumonia. You die from diabetes. You die from cholera or smallpox or, you know, anything but AIDS. So you should be aware of that. Now, this bird flu over here, they say this Tamiflu over here is the defense against it. Let me ask you this. Do you suppose that a chemical concoction or your own immune system might be a better defense? I'm betting on my immune system. So what I'm doing is I take supplements, I eat pretty good food, and I try to keep my immune system at peak performance. Now, the design mechanism in your immune system works like this. If your immune system's working, a foreign virus or bug gets into your body, the white corpuscles of your body and your bloodstream come out, attack it, grab it, kill it, and dispose of it. That's the normal function. Now, the poorer your diet, the poorer your immune response, the poorer your immune system works, the more disease, the more sickness, the more opportunistic diseases that you can get. AIDS is simply an autoimmune deficiency. It's your immune system ain't working up to snub. Well, I got to thinking about that, and I said, I want my immune system to work up to snub, so I'm not really concerned about Tamiflu, but our Secretary of Defense is making a lot of money off of the Tamiflu because the company that he was operating prior to becoming Secretary of Defense mysteriously got that license from Hoffman the Roach. Now, I was really fortuitous, wasn't it? Now, you want to be thinking about that because if these guys can predict that bird flu is going to become human flu, then it says to me that they must already have tested it, and they've already got it in the laboratory, and one of these days they're going to turn it loose like they did the Spanish flu in 1917 at Fort Riley, Kansas, and like they did with the discovery of AIDS in 1963 in Sierra Leone. Excuse me for being cynical, but you know we've got two examples of it already. So it doesn't strike me as a third example called bird flu as stretching the imagination very far. Now, the last article in here deals with campaigners deliver an anti-GMO petition at the World Trade Organization meeting. Campaigners today delivered a petition to the World Trade Organization, the WTO Director General, Pascal Lamy, during trade talks taking place at the Hong Kong Convention Center. The petition opposing the World Trade Organization trade dispute over genetically modified GM food filed by the United States, Argentina, and Canada was signed by more than 135,000 people from 100 companies, or countries rather, and more than 740 companies and organizations representing 60 million people. French farmer Jose Bovey, Indian ecologist Vandana Shiva, and Carolyn Lucas, Green Party member of the European Parliament for the UK, are among those who delivered the petition. Bovey said farmers and consumers strongly oppose genetically modified organisms and we will take action to keep Europe free from GMOs and to protect the world from GM farming. And through the petition, citizens ask the World Trade Organization not to undermine the rights of individual countries, in this case, European countries, to take appropriate steps to protect their farmland, environment, and consumers from the risks posed by genetically modified foods and crops. Well, if I could weigh in on this, I'm not opposed to GM foods. I think that you people out there who want to eat genetically modified food should have the right to choose. I don't think that I should come in here and compel you to eat open pollinated food if you don't want to. And I notice that we usually divide up on sides. The Monsanto and the big corporations want to compel us all to eat GM food. They don't want us to have any choice. And then the opponents to GM food, they want to wipe out GM food and GM farmers and everything that's GM and take away from you your right to choose. Now, God never does that. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, he tells you in plain language that where you're headed, that duck don't dance, and that it's probably going to kill you, but then he tells you to go ahead and choose, and then he says, now, if you've got any brains, choose life, but you certainly have a right to choose death if that's what you want to do. I think people should have a right to choose death. It's a choice. That's what freedom is all about, freedom and liberty. It's probably the wrong choice, at least based upon my concept, based upon my understanding. I think it's the wrong choice. I think genetically modified food is a bad choice. I don't think I should tell you what you should eat. So I want you to go ahead and produce your genetically modified food and eat all you want. I just don't want you to enforce it on me, and that's my objection. I object to Monsanto forcing this on me. And the Europeans, they're real concerned and they're objecting to Monsanto enforcing it upon them and using the World Trade Organization to do that. If we all subscribe to the philosophy of freedom of choice, then there would be those who want hybridized seed, want hybrid food, who want genetically modified organisms, and then it'd be the rest of us that don't want them. And then we'd have our food, and you'd have your food, and we could make that choice. That's what liberty is all about. And that's what is being espoused here in the Heirloom Gardener. So I'm going to give you their name and address again. The Heirloom Gardener, put out by Jerry Gettle, bright young fellow. Printed on recycled paper for all of you people that care about trees. And it's the Heirloom Gardener, P.O. Box 70, Mansfield, Missouri, and the zip code is 65704. They got a telephone up there. It's 417-924-1222. Again, that's 417-924-1222. Subscription rate is $12 a year here in the United States, $18 in Canada and Mexico. Pretty soon, Canada and Mexico will be part of the United States. And then it'll just be $12 for all of us, won't it? All right, the Heirloom Gardener magazine is published four times a year by Rare Seed Publications. So if you want to go to their webpage, it's called www.rareseed.com. Hey, I'm about out of time. I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are brought to you as a public service. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.